Hello, and welcome to the AK-47 podcast. My name is Kristen Godsey, and today is June 11th, and as so often seems to be the case, I have not had the opportunity to focus on the work of Alexander Kollontai, or really read much of anything these days. Since my new book came out on May 16th, I've been pretty busy, and in a good way, I think, but it does mean that this podcast often sort of falls into the cracks because I just don't have time to record and edit and post and do all the things that I need to do in order to make this thing happen. But I am back today. It's a nice quiet Sunday, and I am actually puppy sitting right now. And the little puppy that has been bouncing all over the place and driving me crazy all day because it needs lots of attention and needs to go outside like every hour because it isn't quite yet housebroken, has just fallen asleep. And so I'm hoping that I can use this opportunity while the puppy is sleeping to read you a short story from the collection that I read the review of in the last episode, A Great Love, which was translated by Kathy Porter back in 1980. The piece that I'm going to read today, it's called Conversation Piece. And it's basically a snatch of an overheard conversation of a couple in Berlin. And it's very ethnographic. I think the review in the New York Times called it Chekhovian in the sense that it's got this kind of slice of life realism to it that I think is really interesting. And it's very short. It's one of Kollontai's pieces of fiction. And I think it is a kind of fascinating piece because it was written at a time when she was sort of grappling with the idea of love and sex and monogamy and jealousy and sort of all of the resistance that she got for trying to reimagine the Russian nuclear family in the 20s. But speaking of the New York Times, I want to let everyone know that a really crazy thing happened to me in the last couple of weeks. I kind of out of the blue got an email from a producer for the Ezra Klein Show, which is a podcast of the New York Times. It's quite a well-known podcast, and Ezra Klein is a pretty amazing political journalist who apparently was out in California and popped into Bookshop Santa Cruz and found a copy of my book, which he then read and liked, I guess, and wanted me to come on the show and talk about it. So I made this really wild one-day dash up to Manhattan to record with Ezra Klein in the studio, in the headquarters of the New York Times on 8th Avenue. When I think back on it, it's like almost a bit surreal. The whole thing was really weird. It was hard to prepare for. It was hard to know what to say because obviously I did not have the questions ahead of time. The recording was almost an hour and 40 minutes, I think, but then the final episode was only an hour and 10 minutes. So they cut out a bit of our conversation, but I think the kind of key parts are there. So I have not been making AK-47 podcasts, but I have been guests on other people's podcasts, most notably and recently, because this episode of the Ezra Klein Show just dropped on Friday, June 9th. So if you haven't heard it yet and you're interested to hear me talking about my latest book, Everyday Utopia, I will leave a link in the show notes. The other great thing about the New York Times is that they always post a full transcript of the show. So I will also leave a link to the transcript as well in case you just want to read it rather than listen to it. Yeah, I've been doing a couple other podcasts and radio shows. I did an online event at Politics in Prose. There's a video link to that as well in the show notes, as well as my appearance at the Free Library of Philadelphia with the brilliant Guardian journalist Arwa Mahdawi. And yeah, lots of stuff going on. Jacobin magazine just printed a 2,000-word abstract from the introduction to the book. And I have a couple of events and interviews and other things coming up in the next couple of weeks. So if you're in Boston, I will be at the Harvard Bookstore with the journalist Rebecca Traister on June 23rd, which I believe is a Friday night. And then for those of you out in California or able to jump online in the Pacific time zone, on July 19th, I will be doing an online event for City Lights Bookstore in San Francisco. And then in August, I'll be in Second Life, also in Pacific time, doing the Second Life Book Club. And on August 13th, I will be doing a lecture on the Sunday platform of the Society for Ethical Culture in New York City. So lots of stuff going on. Anyway, I am really excited at the attention that the new book is getting. I mean, it's just been an amazing, you know, couple of days since the Ezra Klein podcast dropped and getting emails from people who are interested in learning about the book and, you know, just sort of basically finding myself once again in a place where I'm trying to balance my very introverted tendencies with trying to make myself more publicly available and speaking to people and doing events and connecting with readers and all the things that authors are supposed to be doing. It's kind of ironic that authors, you know, have to do all this sort of like public facing, forward facing stuff when so many of us are just really like to stay home and read books and write and not really interact with other people. Or, I mean, interact with other people, but just on a more controlled basis, I suppose. So that brings me to the story that I'm going to read today, which is called Conversation Piece. And as I said, this is Kathy Porter's translation. It's a conversation between a man and a woman on a train station platform. And it's a love affair that is basically breaking up because the woman is basically in love with a young man who is her lover or has been her lover. But she's married to a man who is sort of her intellectual companion, a kind of comrade figure. And she basically decides that her work, her kind of intellectual work or her political work, is ultimately more important than her passions. And this is like such an interesting insight into Kollontai, because Kollontai was constantly having to deal with the fact that her work was interfering in her love affairs, or her love affairs were interfering with her work, and that she often felt herself pulled in different directions. So I imagine that when she wrote this story, she was very, very cognizant of the fact that many women, new emancipated women, were in relationships with men who didn't understand their commitment to the political causes for which they fought. Okay, a conversation piece. The man flung open the compartment door at Berlin's Friedrichstrasse station and stood aside for her as she stepped out. Everything about him, his confident, knowing look, his sensual lips, radiated youthful energy. Unlike her, she was thin and fragile, with untidy dark hair which hung in a long fringe over her anxiously raised eyebrows. Her tired, nervous face showed the shadows of experience. "To think if we hadn't met like this, purely by chance, you'd have slipped off without even saying goodbye to me. You must be the greatest fool I ever met. I can still hardly credit it." His snappish tone was in direct contrast to the expression in his eyes, which told a very different story. "To think of all those letters you wrote me, telling me how passionately you missed me, how you couldn't live a moment longer without me. And then what'd you do? You run off, just like that, without a word. Why, even common logic should have told you, 'Look, I did miss you.' Oh, yes, indeed, I did. You know that quite well.
But won't you try to see my side of things? No, I won't. Why should I? Now you listen to me instead. You're putting yourself and me through utter hell. And the reason you're doing this to us both is because you're being a fool. All that rubbish about being a free woman, or whatever it was you called it. A single woman, was it? Well, that sounds pretty damn silly to me. Be your own master. Is that what you want? Lucky you, is all I can say. As well as that legally wedded husband of yours who you get down on bended knee to every day, because that's what husbands are for, aren't they? You've got me. And what do you want of me? How am I any less of a husband to you than he is? Tell me that. Now, you're the one who's being stupid, Katinka. Do please try to understand. You see, for 10 years, he and I have worked very closely together. Emotionally, intellectually, in every way, we've been so united. You must realize how precious that is to me. All right. There's nothing wrong with that, I suppose. It's just your total enslavement to him that I can't forgive. Look at you. You call yourself a free woman. You preach and write about women's emancipation. And then suddenly, there you are, down on your knees, saying, "Forgive me, Vanichka, darling. I've wronged you, but I promise never to be unfaithful again." Must you always joke about it? Actually, I don't see what else I could do in the circumstances. I suppose I could have wrung my hands and gone into a frenzy of jealous anger over you and your precious feelings. But no, I thought, better not get too worked up about it. It's my nature anyway to be fairly easygoing. So tell me, what is this ideal couple, linked by all these deep and meaningful spiritual affinities, going to do next? Or shouldn't I ask? I suppose you'll return to him and beg him to take you back. Then, ever so magnanimously, he'll accept you. You'll write some more books together. Everything will be exactly as it was in the old days, and you'll be his grateful servant for the rest of your life. Ah, well, you'll just have to try and trample on all the guilty dreams you used to have about me, over which you used to sigh so poetically in your letters. You'll have to try and put me completely out of your mind, won't you? You wouldn't want to recognize me if we meet again sometime, after all. And then there are all those evenings we spent walking in the Tiergarten. You'll have to forget those, you know. Not to mention what you describe as my deadly kisses, and stop it at once, Katya. Stop being so cruel. Aha, so I'm being cruel, am I? Look, my love, it's you who are leaving me for your lawful wedded husband with whom you have all those deep spiritual bonds. Remember, it's you who decided you couldn't bear the idea of sacrificing his peace of mind merely for the sake of some young lad who seems to have some deadly hold over you and who only knows about loving and kissing. It's you that's leaving me, so don't you call me cruel, all right? Because it's hardly logical. He tried to maintain this insouciant tone, but his nervousness was nonetheless very evident. She sat slumped on the station bench, her head bowed. He stood beside her. Both were silent for a moment. Katya, she looked up, pleading with him. Yes? His eyes met hers. Can't you understand? All this is really difficult for me, you know. So what do you expect me to do? Feel sorry for you? Be your ever sympathetic and faithful follower? No thanks. Look, I did that before, and I'm not going to do it again, understand? I can't think why you don't leave him if this whole thing's making you so unhappy. Go on, be brave, do it. You're an independent woman, you're free. You don't need him. Think how we've loved one another. Ever since that first night, think how good it's always been. And just think how you'd melt in my arms this very moment if... Oh, cut the hypocrisy, my darling foolish woman, and start making your own life again. Why are you doing this to us? What's the point of inflicting all this punishment and suffering on us both? Oh, yes, a moment ago I might have been laughing. But how do you imagine I'm feeling inside? How can I bear to let you leave me? Won't you please stay with me tonight and hold me one last time as you promised you would? Stay with me tonight, then you can decide. then if you do decide to go back to him, well, that's your funeral. But for now, come with me. I've waited for you so long, morning, noon, and night. I've waited. The flowers won't bloom until you love me again. So come with me now, please. It's little enough to ask of you when you're going to take away everything I have. But Kocha, how can I? How could I even look him in the eyes when I got back to him? How could I live with myself if I did that? Oh, I hate myself. I hate everything. Now everyone's watching you cry. Goodness, and you're an independent woman too. I think I really believe now what you told me that first night we met, when you said, you're quite wrong about me, you know. Do you remember? I'm really the most ordinary woman you could possibly imagine, with all kinds of silly prejudices, and your libertine ways won't attract me in the slightest. Aha! So now you do remember. And do you remember how I replied? Yes, you obviously do, because you're grinning all over your face. Well, if you insist on crying in public, I shall employ a time-honored remedy, right here in front of everyone else, and you've only yourself to blame. Oh, so you won't? You coward. No, I won't, she said firmly. I'm not going to compromise myself for you because you're not worth it. I don't care enough about you. Look, there's the Charlottenburg train. Come on, let's hurry and catch it before it leaves. No more discussion now, all right? That can wait. We can see about that all afterwards, after we've said goodbye to one another forever. The two figures disappeared into the crowd. All right. So that was conversation piece. Obviously, it's just literally a snatched conversation from a train platform between a woman and her lover. And basically, she's dumping him to be with her husband, who is not really her lover, but sort of her coworker with whom she writes books, apparently. So it's an interesting piece. And obviously, as I said, it's about this tension between being in love for love's sake, sexual love, romantic love, and being in love on this more spiritual level, maybe having a comrade that you really work well with and admire, for whom you feel a kind of affinity, but then like this weird jealousy thing gets in the way. Clearly, Colin Tye's solution to all of this would be to do away with monogamous marriage altogether, but this woman on the train station is clearly caught in realizing that her husband is really disappointed in the fact that she's been unfaithful, even though it's clear that she's in love romantically with this other young man on the platform, who is kind of being selfish and greedy himself. So, difficulties of love, difficulties of life. Colin Tye has so many interesting ways of grappling with these questions of jealousy. Not that she completely overcame them in her own life, but she was at least aware and thinking about the possibility that at some time, at some unnamed moment in the future, we might be able to have wider networks of lateral care and love and support and emotional connection that could function, I suppose, outside of the realm of jealousy and possessiveness. I don't know if we're there yet, but it's something that we should definitely still be talking and thinking about. And to that end, I promise I really will try to record more of these podcasts over the summer. I will be reading the Workers' Opposition, as I promised, and I will probably try to maybe dig in and read the novella A Great Love, which was reviewed in the New York Times review that I read in the previous episode. It's a little on the long side, but I think it will be a fun one to think about because it's at least supposedly based on the love triangle between Vladimir Lenin, his wife, Nadezhda Krupskaya, and their comrade, Inessa Armand. So that ought to be fun. But until then, really, thank you for sticking with the podcast. Thank you so much for listening, especially for those of you out there who are long-term listeners. I've been doing this now for quite a number of years, and it's very sporadic because I just do it on my own. But I really appreciate those of you who are listening. Please continue to spread the word. And for those of you who are new to the podcast and are just listening for the first time, there's a big archive that you can go back and listen to, and you can also share, the links with your friends and comrades. And, you know, as I said, if you're interested in hearing me talk to Ezra Klein about my new book, check out the link in the show notes for that New York Times podcast. I think it's available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all the places where you get your podcasts. So sending you many greetings from sunny Philadelphia. Stay safe and keep up the good fight.